All right, conventionalism is a view that denies just about everything we've said now about knowledge and about the justification of knowledge. And it's extremely important to understand this. I'll deal with it briefly. The idea is that worldviews, or you might say conceptual systems, are like webs. Every part relates to the other part in a very closely knit relationship. So you've got various propositions that you believe. They're all interrelated into this mesh. They're enmeshed. Or they're in a web. It's a web of belief. And the beliefs relate to one another, and they should relate to one another in a consistent way so that they don't contradict each other. Now, the claim is that your web system of beliefs is gained through enculturation. You are brought up a certain way to believe certain things about the world. That's your web of belief. And another person is brought up in a very different way. So if someone is raised in New Delhi, India, they're going to have a basic Hindu web. Someone is raised in a Christian family in Arkansas, they're going to basically have some kind of a Christian web of belief. Now, conventionalism says that your web of belief is merely conventional given your circumstances. Because enculturation is not really an intellectual argument that your belief is true. Because you may have been enculturated into a belief that's false. But see, conventionalists don't want to think that way. They want to say that your noetic equipment, your web of belief, is just a cultural given. It's sort of like your cultural DNA. Right? And if you can't or can't yet change your biological DNA, you really can't change your cultural DNA. You come, as it were, pre-wired with various beliefs in this web. And it all hangs together as a piece. It's a tightly knit web. And the webs are incommensurate with each other. That is, you have web system apartheid. So you've got this, I'm going to use a different color just to be jazzy here. Oh, I do have another color. So here's one web. And then you've got another web with all these different beliefs, interconnected, interrelated. And you want to say, how do they relate with respect to truth, rationality, so on? You don't. They don't relate. They're incommensurate, meaning roughly, they are incomparable. There's nothing in common by which to compare them. Now, what this means basically is that there's no web-independent criteria for truth. The criteria for truth are web-dependent. They're contingent upon your upbringing, your culture, your experience. They're part of your cultural DNA. So the very criteria for truth are relative and situational, conventional. And so the very criteria will differ from culture to culture, person to person. Okay? Now, if this is the case, then it radically redefines knowledge. And it radically redefines rationality as we've been presenting it, right? Because knowledge now means consistency among the beliefs that you've inherited. That's it. Consistency between the beliefs. That's all knowledge really is. But it could be consistency between these beliefs in another system, and that could also be true. Even though in this belief system, you might say God is the Trinity, and in this one you say God is Allah. And in another one you say God doesn't exist. And you've got different webs. Now, what this does is to really eliminate the referential function of language, and is to make truth claims entirely conventional and contextual. But you know, when people in India talk about the Hindu gods, they're talking about gods that really exist. And when Christians talk about the Trinity, they're talking about a God who exists beyond our language game, beyond our conventions, beyond our web. Now, we may have a very tightly knit web of beliefs, But the web, if you will, is related to beliefs, to objects outside of the web. Now, interestingly, there are some people that are Christians who have taken this kind of conventionalist belief. Now, they're not conventionalists on truth, but they're conventionalists on epistemology. Some people are conventionalists on truth. That would be the postmodern view, right? But you could be a conventionalist on epistemology and say, well, you know, the categories you have for approaching the world epistemically are really determined, and we don't have any common ground. We don't have common ground by which to argue things between beliefs, belief systems. There's no common ground. So, for instance, Karl Barth says, you don't argue with unbelief, you preach to it. And you have other people like William Willimon and others who will say things like that. Leslie Newbegin as well was a great missionary statesman in many ways. But he said, the criteria for assessing truth is internal to the worldview. If that's true, then there's no apologetics. You just invite people to come into your web system or into your language game or into your community. But there's no possibility of common ground with logic or with evidence or with some universal givens of human experience, like human inadequacy before the transcendent. There are no epistemic givens that are cross-cultural and common, which means the death of apologetics. You invite someone or you proclaim, you preach against unbelief, but you don't try to find points of contact that you have in common with the other person. And this is certainly not the way to argue. At the first level, you have incompatible truth claims between these webs. It would just leave us with a kind of relativism. Moreover, some people switch webs, and they have reasons for it. C.S. Lewis moved from atheism to idealism to theism to Christianity, and he had reasons along the way. But you're not supposed to have reasons if everything about your belief system, your noetic structure, is self-enclosed by the culture. Now, of course, cultures are varied. You're brought up in America, you get a little taste of a lot of worldviews. Christianity, atheism, Buddhism. Sort of a smorgasbord. So having a coherent web of belief is a necessary aspect of a worldview, but it's not sufficient. You might have an internally consistent worldview that does not correspond to reality. That's very important. I don't know that there is a well-developed worldview that is internally consistent, of course, that is internally consistent. Because usually non-Christian worldviews are internally inconsistent at some level. That is, their basic presuppositions contradict each other, let alone whether they connect with the world or not. But having a coherent set of propositions in your worldview is a necessary test of truth, but it's not sufficient. You with me there? This is a chop you have to get down for this class. You may have noticed this: necessary and sufficient conditions. You have a lot of chops to get down, but you've got to get that one down. Difference between necessary and sufficient conditions. So it's a necessary but not a sufficient condition. Now you might think, but wait a minute, only God has a totally coherent, perfect worldview where everything fits together. You're right. But the basic rudiments or fundaments of your worldview should not be at war with each other. Now, you might be off base as you get toward the periphery to some degree, or there may be some things that don't quite fit. But the basic facts of God, humanity, salvation, history, life after death should fit together and make sense. They should be internally consistent. But that's not enough, although that is required. Okay? I mean, let's say the example I like to use is, what if a jury trial has been rigged and all the witnesses that are brought forth say that this woman is guilty? They all agree. It's perfectly coherent. All the witnesses say she's guilty, but they've all been bribed. And in fact, she's innocent. The reality of it is, in facthood, in fact land, she's innocent, but all the evidence seems to be that she's guilty, and the evidence by itself coheres. But it's all rigged. So the coherence is necessary, but it is not sufficient. You need to have strong evidence that she, in fact, did do it in reality. So it could be that there's coherence without truth in relation to the external world. Can you think of any examples of that? Someone has a belief system that comports with itself but just doesn't fit what's out there. Well, it's possible that, you know, the internal assumptions of paganism are true, but let's say it's a type of paganism that denies real moral evil, and a lot of it does. Then, you know, how can they account for that in their worldview when they see it, when they experience it, and so on? So, you know, the adequacy of a worldview has to do with its internal consistency, but also has to do with how well it relates to the external world. The last point here before we take our break. The assumptions or the presuppositions of a worldview are really more like glasses than eyes. And I get this from David Clark's book, Dialogical Apologetics. It's possible to try on, if you will, another assumption, or try on another worldview to see if it makes better sense of reality. Now, if conventionalism is the case, it can't be done. But I think we do it all the time when we try to adjudicate between arguments. I've been writing an apologetics text. And I've got about 3 chapters on the creation-evolution issue. And I'm trying to see what the argument is from the Darwinian perspective. You know, I have to say, well, could it be like that? Could it be that homology gives us strong evidence for a common ancestor? Is there really an argument there or not? They think there is. Is there? You try to think along with them. And I think it's possible to do that without denying your own belief. You're just trying to understand another perspective. And I believe we need to call non-Christians to do this with Christianity. To say, well, here's a perspective. I think it's true. I think it's rational. Let me tell you why by emphasizing points of contact and common ground. And would you at least, you know, think along these lines? Could this be true? If it were true, would you want to know it's true? What would it take to show you it's true? See, those kinds of questions. But some people are in the category that worldviews are like eyes, you know, and you can't really try on a new pair of eyes. Now, you could have cataract surgery or something like that, but with glasses, you see whether or not it illuminates the environment better, if it sharpens the focus or blurs the focus. And the idea is that a worldview is a set of lenses through which you see, understand, perceive the world. Now, there are some things that are more like eyes, that are just givens, and I think those are the laws of logic, and certain basic human factors built into us by God. But in terms of worldviews, they're really much more like lenses or glasses than eyes. And if so, we have a lot of opportunities to invite other people to, well, look at it this way. Consider this perspective. Could this perspective be the true perspective? Or make more sense than the perspective from which you are arguing? But if this conventionalist view is true, nothing like that can be done.